You are listening to The Breakfast Show here on Faith FM, joined by myself, Lawson. Got Lindsay in the studio and producer Shell as well. Just before we get into our amazing interview, talking all about science, history, archaeology. It's going to be incredible. I have a giveaway to talk about real quick. We do a birthday giveaway every month. So if your birthday is in the month of March, you can win the Bible Promise book. Now, this is a Bible. This is the Promise Bible. And so basically, this is a big, beautiful Bible. It's, you know, material bound, beautiful pages, great margin size and whatnot to make notes. But simultaneously as well, it also has beautiful promises in it. It highlights those promises and give commentary as you're reading through. There's a big Bible that we want to give to you for free. The only way to get it, though, is going into the draw. And how you get in the draw is by having a birthday in the month of March. Now, we're going to be drawing this on the 17th. Of March, so before then, get your birthday in, but text us at 0491-064-669. Text us at that number with your birth date, and we will put you in the draw. So, guys, again, 0491-064-669. Text us in with your birthday to win the Promise Bible. This awesome KJV, absolutely for free. Now, on the phone, we've got with us from Creation Ministries International, Mark James. Mark, how are you going today?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Oh, we are stoked to hear from you all the way from the great nation of New Zealand, joining us here across the pond here in Australia. Going to be talking about, you know, topics regarding and relating to creation, the history of this world, archaeology. What are we going to be having a look at today, Mark?
I thought we could have a look at a little bit of Egyptian history and how it fits in with the Bible.
Egyptian history is epic. I am really keen to talk about this, and particularly how it fits in with the Bible as well. We're talking about contemporaries, you know, who lived just south of you could say the nation of Israel once it was eventually set up there. But yeah, well, where do we start? When it comes to Egyptian history and the Bible, the links between them, you know, common causes and things happening, where do we start in that conversation, Mark?
A lot of people will sort of say, okay, why is Creation Ministries interested in the history of Egypt? But our ministry as a whole, what we look at is how history in that area fits in with the Bible. Secular archaeologists would tell us that there is no evidence for the Hebrews, for Israel in Egypt. And if there is evidence, it's at completely the wrong time. So as a ministry, we actually have a lot of articles on our website about Egyptian history. We have a very good book called Tour Egypt, and we also organize tours for people to go into Egypt and to look at Egyptian history from a biblical perspective.
Okay, so you've got this focus on Egypt that's kind of been born out of hey, it's probably necessary to have some historical link between Egypt and the Hebrews and the Israelites and whatnot, given their frequent mention in the Bible, right?
And that's for sure. And the Bible is often we hear how the Bible says that they're talking about the Lord who brought us up out of Egypt. And if the Egyptian history and biblical history don't match, then you get a situation where, well, here's the Bible saying constantly that the Hebrews were brought up out of Egypt. It starts to call into question the biblical account. Now we're not actually trying to prove the Bible in this situation, because I mean this is historical science and you can't prove things. But what we've done as a ministry is we've looked at the biblical account, linked that into the Egyptian history. And it's amazing how many things sort of fit together and fit together almost perfectly. Now, the secular scientists would tell us, the secular archaeologists would tell us, no, that's not the case. But when you look at it, it all starts to come together. I've got one very sort of simple thing to talk to you about today, sure. And that is the Pharaoh of the Exodus.
Okay. Okay.
So Yep.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so the Pharaoh that was around in the time of them actually leaving Egypt.
Yes.
Because we have a line of pharaohs that, you know, in terms of an era of pharaohs and the dynasty of pharaohs, I believe it was the 18th dynasty of the Egyptian pharaohs, which was around the time that the Exodus was. But we're talking about the pharaoh that was there when they were leaving.
Absolutely. And you're right. In 1 Kings 6, verse 1, it says, in the 480th year after the people of Israel came out of the land of Egypt, in the 4th year of Solomon's reign, Solomon began to build the temple. Now, most scholars would tell us that the 4th year of Solomon's reign was 967 or 966 BC. Mm-hmm. So if you add 480 years to that, you get a biblical date for the Exodus of around 1446 or 1447 BC. Okay. And you are correct. That basically puts the Exodus in what's called the New Kingdom in Egyptian history and in the 18th dynasty, which lasted from 1550 to 1292 BC, according to Egyptian history. Now, the dates for Egyptian history, we would say that around about that time, they were very good. You know, within 10 or 20 years, they were fairly accurate.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a couple of things here that obviously Moses was in Egypt. He was a prince of Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
We know that he killed an Egyptian, and so he fled from the pharaoh of the time who was seeking to kill him.
Sure.
And we know from the Bible that Moses was in exiled or out of Egypt for 40 years. And we know that because there's a couple of references, one in Acts where Stephen's talking about it, but also in Exodus as well. And so we know that he was out of Egypt for 40 years. Mm-hmm. And then God says to Moses that the people who seek to kill you are dead.
Yes.
Okay, so you look at that and you think, okay, so 40 years, the people who are seeking to kill him are dead. You would assume that includes the Pharaoh who is seeking to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And the assumption from that is that particular Pharaoh who sought to kill Moses reigned for 40 years or longer.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was away for 40 years, and then God said that the Pharaoh seeks to kill you is dead. So we're looking for a Pharaoh who reigned for more than 40 years. That was the Pharaoh who sought to kill Moses. There is only one Pharaoh in the 18th dynasty who reigned for more than 40 years.
Really? Wow.
Yep. Okay, so that sort of narrows it down. And that Pharaoh is Thutmose III.
Mm-hmm.
So Thutmose III is now dead. Moses comes back to Egypt, and he will come up against the Pharaoh who comes after Thutmose III. And that Pharaoh is Amenhotep II. Amenhotep II would therefore be the Pharaoh of the Exodus.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, I've got something out of the Bible here, which is absolutely fascinating. Let me just have a look at this. Okay, so the Bible actually tells us in Exodus 12, verses 29 to 30, it says, at midnight the Lord struck down all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh who sat on his throne. And then it says, and Pharaoh rose up in the night. Okay, so the firstborn of Egypt were all killed, of the Egyptians,
mm-hmm.
and then Pharaoh rose up in the night. So we can know something about that Pharaoh. Can you work out what it is?
He had a son?
He had a son, but hold on a second. He survived. That Pharaoh survived the 10th plague.
Mm, so mm-hmm. he wasn't the firstborn himself?
He can't have been the firstborn.
Oh.
Okay.
Interesting. Okay.
Okay, so now we know something more about that particular pharaoh. And what we know is that Amenhotep II, who is, at this stage we're thinking is the pharaoh of the Exodus, he was not the firstborn son.
Really?
His older brother, Amenemhat, actually died before their father died. So he was not the firstborn son. Okay, so that fits nicely. Okay, so at this stage, Amenhotep II is looking quite good. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Lucky.
But then what? Yeah, okay. But then what about his, the person who comes after him as pharaoh? What can we know about the next pharaoh? He can't have been the firstborn son either.
Mm. Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Because he would have died in the 10th plague.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we know from Egyptian history that his successor was Thutmose the III, and Thutmose the III was not the firstborn son.
Mm. Was that Thutmose the IV? I think Thutmose the III was before Amenhotep.
I'm sorry. Yep. Hold on. Yep, you are right. Thutmose the IV.
Yeah, okay.
And there's so many Thutmoses and there's so many in, okay.
Amenhotep.
Thutmose, yes.
We're finding our bearings here. Okay, Thutmose the IV then comes. Okay.
Okay, so Thutmose the IV was not the eldest son of Amenhotep II, okay? So basically, for the Exodus, you're looking for two pharaohs in a row who were not the firstborn son.
Mm-hmm.
And they are an exact after the pharaoh who was seeking to kill Moses.
And reigned for 40 years.
Yep. There are only two pharaohs in a row who were not the firstborn son, and that is the two, that Amenhotep II and Thutmose IV.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Now, again, this isn't absolute proof of the Bible. Believe me, I'm not trying to prove the Bible here. I'm just trying to say that the history in Egypt actually fits beautifully with the biblical account.
Mm.
And a fascinating thing is that Thutmose the III, he was known as the Napoleon of Egypt. He went out on all these different expeditions out in and fighting against the nations around him. During all that time, he brought back lots and lots of booty, lots of gold and silver and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But he only brought back about 3,000 slaves.
Okay.
Amenhotep II, who we believe is the pharaoh of the Exodus, he only conducted, I think it was two expeditions, and he brought back over 100,000 slaves.
Wow.
So you have to ask, why the difference? Why did the pharaoh before the Exodus bring back lots of booty but no slaves, whereas the pharaoh of the Exodus brought back lots of slaves?
That's interesting.
Because he'd lost the Hebrew slaves.
Mm.
So again, all these little details fit together beautifully to show that the Egyptian history and the biblical history fit together really well.
Wow. And I mean, we were actually talking recently on the breakfast show about how they reckon they've found the tomb of Thutmose the II recently, who was the husband of Hatshepsut, who is believed to be the woman who picked Moses up out of the river. And so we can say, and Hatshepsut being the only woman pharaoh that, you know, lived during that time, being a ruler and having the power to take in a Hebrew as her own son.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredibly interesting history.
Yeah. The interesting thing about Hatshepsut, I will struggle to say this name, Hatshepsut, the Egyptians had this belief that to live on in the afterlife, your name had to be spoken out, which is why the hieroglyphs have the names of the pharaohs. And so when people speak out your name, it means you live on in the afterlife.
Mm.
Wow.
Now, Hatshepsut, there's been this attempt throughout Egypt to get rid of her name on all the monuments,
really?
Which means that people didn't want her to live on in the afterlife.
Hmm.
Now, if you were Amenhotep II and you were looking back to see how all this problem with Moses came about, who's the person who started it?
That woman.
Yeah.
That woman.
Hatshepsut.
Yeah. All right, yes. She started it. And so would you want her to live on in the afterlife?
Probably
no.
Not if you had issues.
So Yep. So what do? You try to get rid of her name wherever it is. And that's what we find in the Egyptian, in the hieroglyphs. Wherever her name is, it's been chiseled out. Wow. A lot of her statues have been defaced because she was the one who took Moses out of the river. And she started the whole process, which led to the Exodus. Yeah. So again, it fits together really amazingly well.
Yeah.
And you know what? This is not research that I've done. I'm just telling you about research that is being done around the world, and Creation Ministries has been a part of that. And as I said, we have lots of articles on our website, creation.com, about this topic. There are people who will dispute some of this stuff, but that's what's so great about science, is that you can constantly be looking at these things.
Yeah, that's amazing. Mark, thank you so much for joining us. We've come actually to the end of our segment, but incredibly interesting information regarding Egyptian history.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM, positively different.
And you're listening to The Breakfast Show here on Faith FM. You're joined by myself, Lawson. You got Lindsay in the studio as well. Producer Shell, too. They did that, played that report again from the gender pay gap. It was very interesting. And then this time, because last time it didn't have the woman speaking, and this time they've got the woman in, and, you know, which is pretty normal. Like, they, you know, they'll get like a representative from one of these companies. And the woman's just like, oh, yeah, so they're getting paid less because they do less overtime. And it's like, oh, why do they do less overtime? Because they have family responsibilities. And
that's exactly what we just said.
That makes sense. You cannot earn money if you're not working. So there you go. Hey, you're listening to The Breakfast Show here. But then I think that then they made a statement about, diversity hire, and like, oh, you know, whether they should hire more women to have like those. Because they're like, oh, there's less women on the higher pay packets, but the higher pay packets reflect a certain amount of experience in the job that they're doing. So then it's like, anyways, interesting conversation. We already talked about it. Let us know what your thoughts. 0491-064-669 is the number to text. But right now, let's get into our next quiz question. Please, producer Shell.
Talking about animals. This is an animal question.
Yay. Mm-hmm.
It is a multiple choice.
Okay.
Which of these animals is not mentioned in the Bible? You might be correct, but it's not one of your options. Okay. Lawson's just turned the computer around with the word penguin on it, which is his favorite animal, by the way.
And they're not in the Bible, so. Okay, moving on. No, all right. Give it to us.
Which of these animals is not mentioned in the Bible? Is it A, a badger, B, a monkey, C, a giraffe, or D, a ferret / gecko? Yes. Depends on the translation.
Okay, so
that
then.
One's already a giveaway.
Okay, thanks for that. Okay, can you read those examples again?
Which of these animals is not mentioned in the Bible? Is it A, a badger, B, a monkey, C, a giraffe, or D, a ferret or gecko?
I'm going to say this.
Okay, we've got one of you correct and one of you incorrect.
Which one?
Lindsay is right.
Oh,
got you.
Okay, show me the Bible verse that talks about the animal that I picked.
I will. 0491-064-669 is the number here. 0491-064-669.
I am shocked. I am like genuinely shocked. I can't tell you my answer because it'll give it away. But 0491-064-669. That is also
which of these animals? Not mentioned in the Bible. Is it a badger, a monkey, or a giraffe? I did kind of give away the last one, ferret and gecko, which I just think it's so strange that some translations say ferret and some say gecko. It's just funny.
Yeah.
Random.
Dude, speaking of translations, actually, this is a funny one. So in some, like, you know, when they do like glass, you know, stained windows and whatnot in old cathedrals, in some of those stained windows and illustrations of Moses, it has Moses with a horn.
Like out of his head?
Out of his head.
What?
And you're like, why would they do that? It's like Moses during the period of the Exodus with a horn. And it's actually because the Bible, when it talks about like a light shining from Moses's face, when they've translated the Bible into Latin, they've used the word that basically that light was like a horn coming out of his head. Okay. And so they'll, you know, basically illustrate Moses having a horn,
mm-hmm.
which is so funny to me. Is this, what are we doing here? No, you can't show me this yet. We'll talk about it during the answer. Move this away. It's basically showing we where the animal that I picked was in the Bible. So, hey, that's
and now it's stuck.
That's okay. You're right. Hey, you're listening to the Breakfast Shake here on Faith FM. We also have a giveaway for this morning: a Pale Horse Rides by Sean Boonstra. Hashtag horse is the code word to put in to win this prize absolutely for free. And it's looking at the history of Christianity, of Christian persecution, how Christians were able to come through that, and ultimately, set up the, I guess it reflects on the history of our world and the Christian, the environment of Christianity today hinge on these really amazing stories and periods of Christian history. So again, 0491-064-669 is the number to text for that one. Okay, we are going to do a Bible study in Daniel chapter 10. I actually said at the start of the show that we're looking at the Beatitudes, but we're not looking at the Beatitudes. We looked at that in the first part of our show. We are looking at Daniel chapter 10. We're looking at the battle between good and evil. We kind of talked about that in our Beatitude section as well. We looked at, you know, the demon-possessed girl. Mm-hmm. We're looking at, you know, principalities and powers this morning. And you know what? Let's start reading in Daniel chapter 10. Do you want to pick it up for us? Let's read verse 1 to verse 3.
1 to 3? Okay. In the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a message was revealed to Daniel, whose name was called Belteshazzar. The message was true, but the appointed time was long, and he understood the message, and he had understanding of the vision. In those days, I, Daniel, was mourning 3 full weeks. I ate no pleasant food, no meat or wine came into my mouth, nor did I anoint myself at all till 3 whole weeks were fulfilled.
Okay, so this is specifically referencing some of the things that Daniel has seen in vision in the previous 2 chapters.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically the succession of kingdoms from Persia to Greece. Now he is living at this time among the servants of the king in the the Persian Empire. He was previously, and Daniel has such a cool story because he's a statesman for Babylon.
Mm-hmm.
The Persians invade and take Babylon and destroy the Babylonians, and yet Daniel keeps his job.
Yep.
So they're just like, man, this Daniel guy, he's like legit. We're going to keep him. You know, he's basically he does a job transfer here.
Yeah.
From he changes teams here. He leaves one company and goes to its competitor that literally, you know,
probably keeps the same office,
destroys it. So now you've got Daniel. He is serving as a statesman. I love what you said there.
Mm.
He is serving as a governor, as an overseer in the Persian Empire. And it talks here how he's mourning about the visions that he had seen. And why was that? It kind of indicates it here. But why was this mourning happening for Daniel?
There was a long time for this prophecy to come to pass.
Yeah, that's right. Ultimately, Daniel is living in a situation in which his hometown of Jerusalem is completely destroyed, laid bare, and desolate. The reason for this is the destruction of Jerusalem at the hands of Babylon, an event that Daniel witnessed firsthand. Daniel witnessed firsthand the Babylonians show up, destroy his city, and take him personally captive. And, you know, it's interesting because, I think it's such a strange form of captivity, but this is something very unique to King Nebuchadnezzar's Babylon, that they would go and they would find the smartest among the nobility of a particular nation that they're invading. They would take those guys home to Babylon to train them up in Babylonian university to be wise men and advisors to the king or whatever, you know, Nebuchadnezzar saw fit for their job to be. But Daniel's situation is, hey, I'm leaving Babylon now in a kind of a captivity to, I'm leaving my home, sorry, in captivity to Babylon. This is his experience as a, 14, 15-year-old boy. And he watches his whole family around him, like, either die or go into slavery.
Mm.
Like, just a generalized slavery, right? Of you know, slave labor or something like that. Mm-hmm. And his reward for being incredibly smart is that he can watch all of his family get destroyed and then go and serve the nation. Now, Daniel is a man after God's own... David is a man after God's own heart. Daniel as well was just such a precious soul.
Yeah.
Who loved God, who was obedient to God no matter the circumstances. And we've seen that a number of times in the story of Daniel so far. We see whether it's Daniel in the lion's den, whether it's, well, his three friends as well, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, them not bowing down to idols. Whether it's Daniel in the first chapter, they arrived to Babylon as teenage kids. And they're confronted with this decision to make regarding what food to eat. It's like, hey, do you want to eat the grilled hyena and drink the wine of the king of Babylon? Well, and I don't know what they were eating, but it was unclean food.
That's such a random
It was unclean food. It was grilled hyena. It was barbecued crocodile. It was they were eating
probably
something wild out there, you know.
Yeah.
They're eating some hectic food. And I was about to give an example. I have a friend of mine who's eaten like snakes and spiders and all this kind of stuff.
No, thank you.
Yeah. Anyways, so that's the situation that Daniel's living in. He's faithful all the way through, and he's coming to the end of his life, and he's seeing no movement on the front of, hey, what about my city being rebuilt? Like, what about my people, God's people? You know, he's been faithful to God because he knows who God is and he trusts God. And he knows, he understands the plan of salvation. He understands, and he would have seen this in his visions. He understands that God is coming to redeem his people. But he's like, we don't even have a city, let alone a country, let alone a nation. And God gives him prophecies regarding this, but the time periods are like, like hundreds of years.
Oh.
And he's also reading in the book of Jeremiah, his contemporary, like, hey, God actually said 70 years, but nothing's happening on this front. And so it says here that he begins to pray. Let's continue to read. And he begins to pray and he begins to fast. Here it says that, it says, no pleasant food nor meat or wine came into my mouth, nor did it anoint me. So it says during this time of mourning, he's just eating. He's probably drinking water, potentially eating some very simple foods.
Yeah.
But he is... he's in this period of mourning over his nation, and he's appealing to God, God, please do something. Let's continue reading in verse 4.
Verse 4. Now, on the 24th day of the first month, as I was by the side of the great river, that is the Tigris, I lifted my eyes and looked, and behold, a certain man clothed in linen, whose waist was girded with the gold of Uphaz. His body was like beryl, his face like the appearance of lightning, his eyes like torches of fire, his arms and feet like burnished bronze in color, and the sound of his words like the voice of a multitude.
Wow. Okay, so he sees this vision of this dude here. Regular looking guy, what do you think?
No, this guy's cool.
He's cool. He's got some style here. He has this vision. He's, you know, by the side of the river Tigris, and he sees a vision of a man who looks spectacular. This guy who, you know, burnished bronze skin, eyes like torches of fire, a voice which speaks and sounds like multitudes. His body was like beryl, so, you know, like fine gems. His face appeared like lightning. You know, just he's girded in gold and all these kinds of
this
things.
This guy's so sparkly.
He is basically, you know, and I feel like for Daniel, this is a hard situation because he's seeing something heavenly and he's just grabbing like
whatever he can
think to write this down. He's like, it's like the gold of Uphaz. It's like beryl. It's like he's just trying to see like
the best things that he can use to describe.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know what is so, I love this passage so much. It's so interesting. We actually know exactly who this is. Let's jump over to Revelation really quick. We'll go over to Revelation. Let's read Revelation chapter 1. And do you reckon you can pick it up for us in verse 12 of Revelation chapter 1? And we're going to read, let's read from verse 12 to verse 16 or so.
Okay, so Revelation 1 verse 12. Then I turned to see the voice that spoke with me, and having turned, I saw seven golden lampstands, and in the midst of the seven lampstands, one like the Son of Man, clothed with a garment down to his feet, and girded about the chest with a golden band. His head and hair were white like wool, as white as snow, and his eyes like a flame of fire. His feet were like fine brass, as if refined in a furnace, and his voice as the sound of many waters. He had in his right hand 7 stars, out of his mouth went a sharp two-edged sword, and his countenance was like the sun shining in its strength.
Okay, let's stop there. Mm-hmm. This is amazing. This is a really amazing moment.
You're listening to The Breakfast Show. Connect with us on 0491 064 669.
So Revelation is written by John, and John refers to this person as the Son of Man. This person looks exactly the same as the person in Daniel chapter 10, who is also like the Son of Man. Mm-hmm. This is basically, Daniel is having a vision of a glorified Jesus Christ. Mm. Now, you could say that the vision that Daniel is having is of a pre incarnate. There's some debate whether Daniel is having a vision of a pre-incarnate Jesus Christ or a post-incarnate Jesus Christ, or because the idea is, what did Jesus look like before he became Jesus, and then when Jesus was glorified, did he still look similar to how he looked on earth? We don't really know. The reality is that the person that Daniel is seeing is the same person that John is seeing, and that person is the Son of God, and that person is Jesus.
Yeah.
And again, this is an amazing situation because Daniel sees himself in a critical part of history, and he's asking the question, hey, we need, like, these prophecies, I've been blessed by God to receive them, but in terms of when our nation is actually going to be restored so that the Messiah can come forth, like, when is this going to happen? How is this going to happen? God, are you understanding this? I'm in mourning over this. I'm so stressed about this. We're talking about an old Daniel at this point.
Mm.
Talking about an old Daniel.
80s or 90s.
And he's like, Daniel is amazing because he's had such influence over Babylon and over Persia, but he's saying, look, God, you've put me in this amazing position of influence, but there's nothing more I can do. I'm going to die soon, and there's been no movement here. And he's mourning and he's praying, and who shows up to give him comfort and to answer his questions? Jesus Christ.
Mm.
Like, it's incredible. He sees this vision of Jesus Christ there. Let's continue to read in verse 7. Let's read through to verse 9.
Okay. And I, Daniel, alone saw the vision, for the men who were with me did not see the vision, but a great terror fell upon them, so that they fled to hide themselves. Therefore, I was left alone when I saw this great vision, and no strength remained in me, for my vigor was turned to frailty in me, and I retained no strength. Yet I heard the sound of his words, and while I heard the sound of his words, I was in a deep sleep on my face, with my face to the ground.
Okay, so he, like, sees this happening.
Mm.
He's with all these people in the River Tigris, these other servants of the king, sees this happening. They all flee. He falls to the ground with no strength, which is usually the interaction that a lot of people have when they see heavenly beings, and whether it's, you know, Peter, James, and John, whether it's the farmers or the Roman centurions or whoever, maybe these kind of interactions that people have when they see heavenly beings here. They've seen, Daniel's seen Jesus. These other people haven't. Mm-hmm. They just know that there's his presence there, and they're afraid and they're hiding. You know, they would have heard the noises or whatever.
Yeah.
Daniel sees Jesus and he falls down on his face. And now let's continue to read in verse 10.
Verse 10?
Yeah.
Suddenly a hand touched me, which made me tremble on my knees and on the palms of my hands. And he said to me, O Daniel, man greatly beloved, understand the words that I speak to you and stand upright, for I have now been sent to you. Mm-hmm. While he was speaking this word to me, I stood trembling.
Mm.
Then he said to me, do not fear, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart to understand and to humble yourself before your God, your words were heard, and I have come because of your words.
Okay, let's stop there. So first thing of note here is that this person, like it says, Daniel falls into a deep sleep, and then it says a hand touches him, and Daniel kind of awakens, but it doesn't describe the bit. There is something to be said whether this person that's talking to him is the same person that he saw. Mm. Whether it was the person who's communicating to him here is the same person that he saw. And people, scholars and whatnot who have studied his passage is likely not. He saw this vision of the Son of Man of Jesus, but it's likely that he's being communicated to here by not that person.
Yeah.
And the reason is because he can actually talk to him.
Yeah.
It's likely that he is talking here to
an angel,
yeah. Likely the angel Gabriel, who has talking mm-hmm. to, who has spoke to him before,
mm-hmm.
And the angel Gabriel is kind of like, "Hey, like you just saw a vision of the Son of Man, mm-hmm. like, and let me tell you about it," because it goes on to say this is a really really interesting passage here. It says here that Daniel's words were heard from mm-hmm. the moment he prayed. Mm-hmm. Daniel's words was heard, which is something that is very comforting.
Mm.
Right? It's like fantastic to know. Hey, when we pray, God hears us.
Immediately.
From the moment.
Yeah.
From the moment. God isn't not listening to us. No. God hears you. He continues on here. Check this out. Do you want to keep reading in verse 13?
13, yeah. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days, and behold, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, for I had been left alone there with the kings of Persia. Now I have come to make you understand what will happen to your people in the latter days, for the vision refers to many days yet to come.
So, okay, this is really amazing. This kind of gives us some understanding as to why there is a difference between the vision that Daniel saw mm-hmm. of this Son of Man figure and the person talking to him.
Mm-hmm.
The reason is because from when Daniel started to pray, this person who's talking to him now, mm-hmm. likely Gabriel, was already there.
Yeah.
That's what the Bible says. See, he was already there contending here with the prince of Persia. Now, this idea of prince of Persia, king of Persia, it's something that we see throughout the Bible, actually. Because it says he's contending here with the prince of Persia, and not getting through, and he's struggling to be able to do so. And this is highlighting this concept of spiritual battle.
Yeah, warfare.
Spiritual warfare here. Essentially, what we see often, a great example of this is in the book of Ezekiel, where the Bible says that there's a lamentation for the prince of Tyre.
Mm, the king of Tyre.
Well, it starts with the prince.
Wow.
So there's a lamentation for the king of Tyre, but it starts with the prince of Tyre. And the prince of Tyre was literally the political leader of Tyre at that time.
Yeah, the physical guy.
The actual dude, the political leader of Tyre, it gives a lamentation towards him. Hey, bro, your kingdom's going to be destroyed. Then it says, now I've got a lamentation for the king of Tyre.
Mm.
And it says, okay, king of Tyre, you who were in Eden with God, you who walked in the midst of the mountain of God,
mm-hmm.
who are a perfect angel from the beginning. And what we see is that it's making this point ultimately that the ruler of the Tyre, the nation, is Satan himself.
Mm-hmm.
So the prince of Tyre was his political leader,
mm-hmm.
and the ruler of Tyre was Satan himself.
Mm-hmm, a demon.
And what the Bible does here is it interchanges, like when it gives people political titles, it could be talking about their literal, physical human person that is ruling a particular place, or it could be talking about an angel, a demon, the person who's influencing
mm-hmm.
those things, which is, an angel or a demon. And,
yeah.
and we see this here because it refers to, it refers to Michael here,
mm-hmm.
who is clearly, Michael isn't a political leader. We'll get into him in a mm-hmm. little bit. It refers to Michael here as a chief prince. And so this idea of princes and kings can also, it's a substitutory language for, okay, the person who's really calling the shots, which is either an angel or a demon or whoever it may be. Now, him going to battle here, where it says, but the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days. It could be talking about the human person himself withstanding conviction from God.
Mm.
It could be talking about an angel that's mm-hmm. influenced, like an evil angel, like mm-hmm. a demon that's influencing the decisions in Persia,
mm-hmm.
withstanding the mm-hmm. person talking to Daniel here, which mm-hmm. is, again, likely Gabriel. Whatever it is, we can see that although this angel has heard the prayer of Daniel. Mm-hmm. He is being withstood. Mm. And the reason he's being withstood is ultimately because of the personal decisions of the people that are there. Mm. This is why prayer is something that's so important.
Yeah.
This is why prayer is so needed. Mm-hmm. And this kind of factors into our understanding of the battle between good and evil and why there is free choice. And that is that when we pray, what we're saying is when we pray to God and ask him to be in situations, what we're saying is, God, I'm opening this situation up for you. I'm using my will as a citizen mm-hmm. of the world, as a human being, to let you, God, the ruler of heaven and earth and the universe, to come in and to work here.
I give you my consent.
I give you my consent, right? Yeah. And what is happening here is, although God's workers have shown up, there is this battle happening still over the mind and over the situation, the mind of the Prince of Persia, the situation in Persia. Mm. There is this battle taking place over convincing, you know, whoever is leading Persia at this time, you know, what they should do or what they should be about. It's a very interesting situation.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM, positively different.
Producer Shell, we need a quiz answer.
So the answer to which of these animals is not mentioned in the Bible, a badger, a monkey, or a giraffe, is a giraffe.
Okay.
I got that right.
I got it wrong. It was between, I know badgers in the Bible, but it was between giraffe and monkey for me. And I'm just thinking, I'm like, does the Bible talk about monkeys?
Yeah. I showed you the spot. Did you see it?
I didn't read it. I just saw that you had highlighted the word monkey.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It was a load coming across on a ship, including apes and monkeys.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Back when Solomon was just going lavish and luxurious, he had peacocks and monkeys imported with all everything else.
Mm. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. That's very interesting. I will stand corrected. Mm-hmm. I have learned something today. Hey, let's get into our last quiz question, please, producer Shell.
How many golden lampstands, each representing a church in Asia Minor, did John see in his vision of the revelation of Christ? Got correct answers, surprisingly, here in the studio.
Wow.
It was one wrong answer. I expected you both to get that one very, very quickly. But that was very fast. Both of them got it in well and truly before I finished reading the question. Mm-hmm. I-491-064-669. How many golden lampstands, each representing a church in Asia Minor, did John see in his vision of the revelation of Christ?
Mm. Okay, so 0491-064-669 is the number to text if you know the answer to that one. It is also the number we can send in our code word hashtag horse to receive A Pale Horse Rides by Sean Boonstra, an epic book that we want to give you absolutely for free. You're listening to The Breakfast Show this morning. And, okay, we're considering Daniel in Persia here. And, okay, so we see that I had said that, you know, we're getting some more context here, some more understanding about what's happening here. Who exactly is talking to Daniel, who this Michael person is. Now, this is really interesting because it says here, okay, you know, it says that, but the prince of the kingdom withstood me 21 days. Behold, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me. I want to ask you a question. How long had Daniel been fasting?
3 full weeks or 21 days.
When did he have this vision of this Son of Man, ultimately Jesus?
Right at the end, wasn't it?
Right at the end, right? It was on the 21st day. Mm-hmm. It says here on the 24th month. So he's writing, he's like, yes, for 3 weeks in the previous section here, it says, yep, for 3 weeks I have been fasting. I've been on this fast. And then it says now on the 24th day of the first month. So it's like, okay, for 3 weeks I've been doing this. And then it says now on the 24th day of the first month. So it's on that, after that period of 3 weeks, that then he sees this vision of the Son of Man. What that correlates with what the angel here is saying to Daniel here is that how these things correlate says, but the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days, and behold, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me. Mm. So on the 21st day, he has this vision of the Son of Man coming, and Gabriel says, yeah, that's because on the 21st day, Michael came to help me. Mm. This is some of the best evidence in the Bible that Michael the archangel is Jesus Christ himself and is the name of essentially a pre-incarnate Jesus. Mm-hmm. The reason, you know, there's many reasons for this. There's a number of times where the Bible says the angel of the Lord is there and present before people. And for the best example of this is Moses, where Moses then worships the angel of the Lord, and the angel of the Lord is happy to receive that worship.
Whereas other angels are like, don't worship
no
me.
No way, yeah.
Yeah,
that's right. So, yeah, in Revelation, John tries to worship the angels, and then, like, because he's just like,
you got it wrong, bro.
So overwhelmed by what's happening, and they're like, do not worship us.
Yes.
Like, we are your fellow brethren. That's what the angels say. But the angel of the Lord, that we see in the book of Exodus is happy to be worshipped and be called God.
Yeah.
We then see this angel being given a name. Eventually we see him, he's called Michael. We see the battle between good and evil that unfolds in Revelation chapter 12, verse 7 to verse 9. It's between Satan and Michael, the archangel.
Yep.
And people, you know, kind of like to poke holes in this and say, oh, but he's an angel. It says he's the archangel. And I'm like, well, the word arch means the head of or the above. Mm-hmm. The word angel means angel. And I'm like, is Jesus above the angels?
Yes.
Yes. Like, it's pretty clear.
Yeah.
Jesus is above the angels. Does anyone command the angels? In fact, Jesus says himself, when they're crucifying him, he says to Peter, if I wanted, I'd have 12 legions of angels here right now.
Yeah.
Why? Because he commands the angels. He is, and we see him also have this kind of place when we see the Son of Man show up to Joshua. And although he's not called Michael the Archangel at this point, he's the captain of the Lord's army, which is made up of
angels. Yeah.
And so we can make this clear connection, correlation. Like, it's quite clear here. Michael the Archangel is one of the titles for Jesus amongst Son of God, Son of Man, Emmanuel. Mm. People get so, I think,
caught up
on this because of the word Archangel.
Yeah.
But I'm like, hey, if Archangel means the head of the angels, like, if Jesus, the Son of God, had another name, it would just be on all of the names that he already currently has.
Yeah, he's got like at least 50 in the Bible. Right?
So Michael the Archangel being Jesus. And as well, I think that where you get a lot of, there's two places that resistance comes to that idea. Firstly, it's from Catholicism because of their, you know, their understanding of saints and worshiping saints and angels and these kinds of things, which as a Protestant, I don't really have time for and I'm not about at all. Mm-hmm. That's a whole nother Bible study in and of itself. But from the Protestant angle, people often, you know, just say, it's not biblically accurate or consistent. But if you actually look at, you know, a lot of the Protestant theology, and if you look at figures, particularly like John Calvin and whatnot, John Calvin and Martin Luther clearly identified Michael as Jesus. And that's what we're seeing here.
Yeah.
It's the same image of, again, we see the Son of Man. He looks exactly the same as the guy in Revelation, the guy here in Daniel. It's Michael the Archangel. He's showing up to basically get it done. And the question then might be, okay, well what power does Jesus have compared to Gabriel? Like, again, if we're dealing with free choice here, and I think there was this, it's not necessarily that Jesus then forced the Prince of Persia. But I think at this point, Jesus ultimately works, well, you could say Michael the Archangel, God works to influence, you know, to help the Prince of Persia catch the vision for what, you know, he's trying to do. And we actually see this origin, well, this history start of, you know, this new influence in the mind of Persians throughout the Bible, these Persian rulers who give heed to the likes of Nehemiah when Nehemiah wants to go rebuild the city.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you know, this new influence comes into power and comes into place here because of Daniel's prayers. Because of Daniel's prayers, now, you know, God is able to work in this area, and they decide to, you know, accept, I think people, you know, being influenced either by Satan or by Jesus, they decide to make their decision, which is really cool. They're experiencing conviction here and following it through. But it continues to read. Let's continue going. In verse 14, do you want to read 14 for us?
So Daniel 10, verse 14 says, "Now I have come to make you understand what will happen to your people in the latter days, for the vision refers to many days yet to come."
Okay, so he's saying here, hey, we're going to look forward to the latter days here. Let's finish off the chapter. Mm-hmm. Let's just, you know, get some understanding here.
Okay. "When he had spoken such words to me, I turned my face toward the ground and became speechless. And suddenly, one having the likeness of the sons of men touched my lips. Then I opened my mouth and spoke, saying to him who stood before me, My Lord, because of the vision, my sorrows have overwhelmed me, and I have retained no strength. For how can the servant of my Lord talk with you, my Lord? As for me, no strength remains in me now, nor is any breath left in me.
Okay, this is such a cool scene.
My Lord.
Yeah, so we see, like, it says here, Daniel, he's looking at who we assume to be Gabriel, an angel talking to him here.
Mm-hmm.
He's talking to this angel, and then he looks at the ground, and he's like, man, I'm cooked.
Yeah.
You know, I'm
exhausted.
I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
And then he looks back up again. It says, and suddenly one having the likeness of the sons of men. So this is now, you know, from the figure that's been talking to him, now the one that was there for 21 days, this son of man who he's just had a vision of before, he is the one that's now talking to him, and he touches his lips.
Mm-hmm.
This is a really interesting situation here. We see
back and forth going on here.
Yeah, we see this happen in the book of Isaiah, this idea of touching lips, of, you know, strengthening, purifying, these kinds of things. And now he's given him strength. He says, my Lord, as you just read, you know, my sorrows are great. I have no strength in me. And the reason he calls him Lord here is there's a clear differentiation to the power he's just been talking to, one of his fellow servants, an angel, who's been there for 21 days. Now he's standing before God himself.
Yeah.
He's standing before Jesus. Well, he's kneeling. He's like on the ground, you know, prostrate before him.
Yeah.
Just telling Jesus, like, hey, like, I'm cooked. Like, I've been through it. I've come to the end of my life. Again, this is the whole point that we've seen so far is Daniel is mourning and fasting because he is running out of time. He's in his old age, and he's like, still nothing has happened.
Yeah.
Still, where is my nation? How will the Messiah come? He's asking these questions, and Jesus is answering him here. And this it's a beautiful situation. My breath has left me, Daniel says. Now let's keep reading 18 and 19.
Then again, the one having the likeness of a man touched me and strengthened me, and he said, O man, greatly beloved, fear not, peace be to you, be strong, yes, be strong. So when he spoke to me, I was strengthened and said, let my Lord speak, for you have strengthened me.
Okay, let's stop there. This is powerful. Like, this is so cool. O man, greatly beloved, fear not, peace be with you, be strong, be strong. You know, Jesus would echo these words. Come to me, all ye who are heavy, who are weary and heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. You know, he's saying here, hey, and then he will say, you know, let my yoke be upon you, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. He said, you know, Jesus would say, hey, come to me. I'm here to help you. That we see here, Jesus, pre-incarnate Jesus, about 500 years before Jesus would come to this earth. He's saying here, be strong, Daniel. Like, I'm here with you. Be strong. And, you know, eventually we see the reply here from the Son of Man here, from Jesus. Do you want to read that for us? Verse 20 and 21.
Verse 20. Then he said, do you know why I have come to you? And now I must return to fight with the prince of Persia. And when I have gone forth, indeed the prince of Greece will come. But I will tell you what is noted in the scripture of truth. No one upholds me against these except Michael, your prince.
So it's a really cool situation here that it finishes off with. It's like, hey, buddy, you got this. You got this. And look, this look, Greece, Persia will be there. Greece will be there. But I am doing a work through these. And it ends off there. It's a beautiful picture. Daniel, a man who served God in one of the most dire times in the history of salvation, you could say, when God's people didn't have a nation, when it looked like Satan had just about won. There's no lineage to bring forth Jesus in. There's no one who even worships God anymore. Daniel, throughout his life, through his faithfulness, gets to see the veil pulled back right at the end of like, hey, the angels are with you. Even the Son of Man is with you. Even Jesus is with you.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM, positively different.
And we've been having a great time talking about Michael the Archangel versus the Prince of Persia. Interesting observations and whatnot. But right now, we need some answers.
I think you know this one. You know this answer. Both of you got it so quickly.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
How many golden lampstands, each representing a church in Asia Minor, did John see in his vision of the revelation of Christ? So if you've looked into the churches or if you've looked into the lampstands, you should have gotten it right, either of those. The answer is seven.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is actually from the passage that we alluded to in Revelation chapter 1, where it says, you know, this is in verse 11 of Revelation chapter 1. It says, what you see, write it in a book and send it to the seven churches, which are in Asia, Ephesus, Smyrna, Pergamos, to Thyatira, to Sardis, Philadelphia, and Laodicea. And then I saw, you know, who was spoken with me, and it goes on to describe him. But it says, I turned and I saw seven golden lampstands. What's really cool, it's actually this picture of Christ. He's wearing, in terms of his clothes, it says he's wearing priestly garbs, and he's surrounded by lampstands. It's actually a picture of the heavenly sanctuary itself that Jesus is in and ministering on our behalf. He is making, as the Bible says, that Jesus is our high priest. He is in the heavenly sanctuary making atonement for us, which is a powerful, powerful scene that Jesus is working on our behalf in heaven. You know, the story of Daniel, he comes down to earth, and he will later come to earth in incarnation as Jesus Christ and will die for us. You know, the reality is Jesus is doing all this work for us to save us. And it's just, it's powerful. It's amazing. We can know that Jesus loves us as a result. If anything proves the love of God, it's the consistent work that Jesus has done for humanity's sake over the history of, you know, redemption, of the history of sin. So you're listening to The Breakfast Show here on Faith FM. We've come to the end of the show, Lindsay.
Aww. It's been so much fun.
Does that make you sad?
I don't want to go now.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, you can stay here if you want. It'll be switching over to Tassie. You shout out Jason Cook and the Tassie Encounters show down there. They'll be in the next hour. But you can stay here and pretend to be on radio, I guess, you know. Or if you got stuff to do.
Yeah, I got stuff to do.
Yeah, we've all got stuff to do.
Gotta find some breakfast.
That's right. Scavenge for some, you know, find some bush tucker. Yeah, dude, absolutely. Lots to do, guys. But we are so glad that we could join you. I'd say, we had some very interesting conversations today. We talked about, obviously, the Bible. We talked about the history of Egypt. We talked about
women.
Shout out women. Love them. Gotta love them. And we talked about whales, and we talked about charity and debt relief. And, you know, throwback all the way to the beginning of our show, we talked about persecution. I think we've had this theme in our show today, particularly in our Bible studies, of good versus evil, and, you know, the powers at play in that particular situation. But I think the powerful thing to know is that I just love what Daniel, what the Son of Man here, what Jesus says to Daniel. He says, "O man, greatly beloved, fear not. Peace be with you. Be strong. Yes, be strong." What's amazing about this situation, how does Daniel be strong? How is Daniel strengthened in this particular passage? Is it like through himself? Is the Son of Man saying here, "Yeah, Daniel, you got this, bro. Like, it's all within you. It's in your heart. Like, you got this." What happens?
It says, "So when he spoke to me, I was strengthened and said, 'Let my Lord speak, for you have strengthened me.'" Just God's words strengthen us.
His words, I love what you're saying. His words strengthen us. Also, it says here that he touches. He touches Daniel's mouth.
Yeah.
He touches Daniel's, you know, shoulder. Mm-hmm. And it says here, like, through touch and through interaction with God here, and then through God's words, that's how Daniel received strength. So guys, draw close to Jesus today. If you need strength, draw close to him through his word. Let him touch your heart. Right now, guys, remember to talk faith, to live faith, and act faith, and you'll grow strong in Jesus Christ.
God be with you till we meet again. Counsels guide, uphold you, with his sheep securely fold you. God be with you till we meet again, until we meet again at Jesus' feet again. God be with you till we meet again.
Thanks for being a part of the Faith FM family. Join our community on Facebook or get in touch at 1-800-FAITH-FM.